Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Airheads? We're back. It's time once again for Putting On Airs. We're here in the virtual Airstream Studios. Cho, I've been dying to get on this here setup with you this week because I've got, I need something explained to me, something of the utmost importance. What in the fuck is going on with the royal family right now? I'm trusting that you will know. Now, here's the thing. I could have at some point looked this up.
Sure.
Obviously, we live in the information age, but I thought it would be more fun to have you just explain it to me because I was laboring under the assumption that you would know just about all about it, or at least have some theories or something. I don't know. So Kate Middleton's dead or gone or
what? That's definitely a working theory. And Trey, here's the thing, and I'll tell you this. And I know this because this is what's happened to me. You could have looked it up, and I maintain that you would still know as much as you currently know. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, they're like,
oh, so it's a mystery.
It's a super mystery because it's all complete. Every single thing that I find out is a complete hypothesis, and there's a conspiracy theory to it. And then every conspiracy theory, there's a conspiracy theory on top of that. So like, the only facts that there are, and these are like facts, is that Kate Middleton has not been seen since holiday time 2003, right?
Okay. So this past December was the last time she was seen in public. And at some point, someone noticed that and put that out there, like tweeted out, like, hey, has anybody else noticed that ain't nobody seen Kate in a while? And then people started ruminating on that or what?
And
has she been notably absent from like important events and things like that, like things she should have been at, but she wasn't, or it's just, hey, ain't nobody seen that bitch.
I think, well, that's the thing is like, I'm pretty sure like anywhere the prince goes, she's supposed to be there. You know what I mean? Like anytime he's seen with his kids, she's supposed to be there. And a lot of people were talking about like she'd put out some press release that like, oh, she had a couple health problems and she was just, you know, don't worry, I'm getting these taken care of, I'll be back soon, whatever. And then a lot of people, of course, were speculating, oh, she's getting a BBL. Do you know what a BBL is?
Big black. I try to say, is there a word for dick that starts with L?
Long?
No. Yeah, I know, yeah. Right? Like what?
It's funny. I you'd think that we'd have one raring and ready to
go.
Know,
but that's what I thought. Like when I said big black, when I started the buh, I was like, I'll have it by the time I get to the L. Like, you know,
yeah.
I'll be able to think of something that means dick that starts with L.
Right.
But I can't, and I still can't.
Like, well, hold on. Let's go through the alphabet and see how many we can get. A, I got nothing.
Vowels are going to be hard.
Well, A, it's a Jewish one, but they call some, like, before they get circumcised, they call them anteater dicks. B would be biggin.
Okay.
Anteater, because it looks like an anteater before they get circumcised.
But yeah. I don't think that's, like, official Jewish lore.
It's racist. Yeah. Actually, you know what? Because like, you know, this is funny. Like, so Jews, like, ooh. Okay. This is right. Pro-Jew, by the way. So Jews get like, it's part of their religious ceremony to get circumcised. Correct. Like,
correct.
That's what a bris is. Yes.
Yes.
And, yeah. But like, I, everyone I know was circumcised.
Yep.
Like, there was only one boy in our school that wasn't circumcised. So, right. Like, why did Jews get all the, like, shine for being circumcised when, like, maybe it's just because ours isn't religious?
I don't think Jews get all the shine for being circumcised. I think that it's like, it's a thing with them because people know it's like they got a dude whose whole job is to snip baby dicks and stuff. The
right. Moil.
Moil. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like people know that guy's name. They know the name of that, job title because like that's a wild job to have.
Right.
It's called a bris, right? When it happens, it's like also like so many comedians have been Jewish and writers and stuff have been Jewish. And that's an inherently humor rich scenario. Moil, bris, circumcision, you know what I mean? I think it's just sort of entered the public consciousness, but I think it was culturally a thing in America for a long time.
Right.
I'm actually curious, TMI here. You mind telling us what's up with your baby? He froze up right then. All right, Airhead, sorry about that. We had some technical difficulties. I know us, hard to imagine, right? Be still your hearts, but it's true. We switched to a different recording service, so that's why things may look a little different to you now. But we left off, Corey. You were frozen at the time, so we were talking about circumcised wieners, mm-hmm. and I said, you know, TMI, I apologize, but I wanted to ask what's mm-hmm. up with your baby's dick. And I have a reason for asking. I'm curious, because it is relevant to what we're talking about. But yeah, what's up with your baby's dick, bro?
Unfortunately, he is circumcised, and I wasn't for it.
That's why I asked, because it's becoming less and less of a thing. It's becoming controversial. My sons are 11 and 12. They were and
what's
they were
up with your baby?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a cultural conversation.
It's so funny to think about. It's so funny to think about, like one of our librarian women fans who has been trying to get her sort of conservative husband like on board with us for a long time. Like, no, they're not like that, I swear. Yeah. And then he walks in and he's like, all right, I'm going to give him a shot. What's up with your baby dick?
I
knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah. But my sons were born in East Tennessee 11 and 12 years ago. And I feel like they were born a year or two or so before that conversation had reached the South or East Tennessee, at least. Like when mine were born, it was just automatic.
It wasn't even a question.
It's just what you did. And so we did it without thinking twice. And then within a couple of years, you know, liberals and hippies and stuff, and I'm not saying they're wrong, I don't mean that pejoratively, but people like that, crunchy people, start being like, hey, we shouldn't be snipping babies' dicks like this. And then it's only progressed from there. So I didn't, but you're in Chickamauga. So I didn't know what the current situation was there. But yeah, you know, apparently I looked it up while we were having technical difficulties because I was curious. Because you asked, like,
how'd you look it up? What'd you type in? Because you might want to delete that.
Prevalence of circumcision.
Okay.
And it varies wildly. Like the most circumcised country, unsurprisingly, Israel. Over 90% there, but also apparently most Muslim majority countries, they also circumcise. And then after the so it goes the Jew country, the Muslim countries, then us.
Right.
And then there's a pretty big drop off after us from we're like 75% circumcised to the next closest to us is South Korea at 58%, then Australia at 45%. So that's the minority.
That just shows you that monotheism is all the same.
Right. Yeah. So that's what it is, right? You're right.
It is dude.
That is what that is. Abrahamic religion. So that's an Abrahamic religion thing.
Abrahamic religion. Dude, they're all the same. Like, dude, they're all the fucking same. Like, that's what people don't like. Whenever somebody, like, when someone says praise Allah, they're saying they're the same as saying praise God. Like, whenever like a Southern Baptist gets upset at the word Allah, it's the craziest thing to me, because I'm like, that just means God in their language. They're talking to the same guy you're talking to, like, and they have basically the same rules that you have. It's just that, like, some of them believe them so much, you know, that like they do some wild shit. But like, dude, all of it, like the Abrahamic religions, like, dude, they're like, even the Quran, like when you put it next to, you know, the Bible, it's so fucking similar. Like, they're all cut and paste shit. And all of them, come from like this ancient fucking sun god shit from Egypt that predates like all of it, that is all like, you know, basically is all about star worship and shit. And then yada, 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 Harry Potter, Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same. It's, we just do it over and over again.
Right. Yes. Back to Wainers, though.
Okay. I want my son. I wanted my son to be able to come good. When I heard that, that was part of it. But then Amber was like, but he'll get made fun of or whatever. And like,
how, who, what?
That's I what mean, I said.
I was how like, often are people going to see his dick at school? And then, I mean, I know it can and does happen.
Right.
But like,
we had one kid that wasn't circumcised. And don't get me wrong, it got brought up. Like, but like, it was just one of those things where like, we saw it. It was different. It got mentioned. But it's not like that was his whole identity. It's not like we talk about it now. Like, but also, now that we know that his cums have been so much better, joke's on us, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, obviously, like, I'm snipped. I'm from the generation where we almost all are. And, you know, I ain't never bothered me none. But they do reportedly say that. But I don't know how you, like... unless you got circumcised later in life, how could you, you know, how could you really know that? You know what I mean? Well, like, well, if it's just scientific nerve endings.
Well, it's scientific because, like, right. I was about to say, because the nerve endings.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, still. But, yeah, so, and anyway, you said earlier, you were like, I don't remember how you framed it, but you were something like, you know, in the Jewish community, there's anteater dicks or something like that. And I was like, that sounds like something that just you say. Is that not something? Because I got drunk one night with our buddy Tushar, who's Indian, and they don't circumcise it generally because they got 1,000 gods.
Exactly.
Instead of just that one asshole.
The more gods you have, the more foreskin you have as well.
Yeah. They got 1,000 gods with 4,000 arms between them and shit. But they're not circumcised. Me and him were drunk talking about it one night. And, I had the revelation. I was like, your dicks kind of look like elephant trunks. That's funny. Elephant trunk dicks. Is that why y'all do it? Because you're like, you know, kinship with your elephant buddies over there or something. But then I started making the elephant noise, talking about it was Tushar's dick and stuff. So sometimes when I see him, I'll do the, you know.
That's why they got to arrange their marriages, too, because if they didn't, they orgasm so good, they'd just be out fucking everything, dude. That's why Tushar don't get tied down, bro.
Well, I was about to say, yeah, I think a lot of them still do get out there and fuck everything. But I mean, yeah, not anyway. Anteater, I'm saying, is that something y'all came up with at school, or did you see that somewhere?
No, for the circumcised. Okay. For the dude that wasn't circumcised,
yes.
It was, as I said, it looked like an anteater because it was the, you know, it looked like that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I assumed. And that makes all the sense in the world to me. It's pretty good for, you know, middle school standards type stuff. But like,
you've never heard that? I thought that was
this is my whole point. What I'm trying to say. You presented that as like they of course are universally referred to as anteater dicks, as I believe we're
pretty bris.
And it's like, yeah, we're all the rest of the world except for like your group of buddies or whatever is like, what? I mean, again, it makes sense, but you talk about it like it's in the Oxford English Dictionary. And it's not like, I don't think I've ever heard that again. It does make sense, but I've never.
Let me tell you something. It's funny you say that, because I wish that I could just off the top of my head just vomit all of our terms that we have like that, because like the more I think about it, man, like, you know, like I remember Seinfeld used to talk all the time about like, you know, when people would ask him like, oh, were you the class clown or whatever? And he was like, I mean, yes, but like every one of my friends was funny. You have no idea. He's like, everyone was funny. And like, I really like, in looking back on it, like my group of friends, and I know you can relate, were like four middle schoolers. And I'm talking about like in the genre of comedy, were some of the smartest, most creative fucking people on the planet. Like when it came to putting other people down
right,
and being funny, I'm talking Mensa level motherfuckers.
Well, it's like, I mean, John Mulaney, it must be a universal truth because John Mulaney has that great bit about exactly that, where he's like, middle schoolers are more savage than anybody. Yep. It's like they pick out they somehow inherently know the thing that you're most sensitive about. And he was like, look at that dude. He got feminine hips.
That's the thing I'm sensitive about.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so, you know, that's just like a known fact, dude. Yeah. Middle school playground dog.
But my buddies. But my buddies are still like that, man. And like, dude, some of your buddies too. Like, whenever we hang out at Christmas, you know, like when you know, like Key and Thompson, and like if Robbie's involved or whatever, I guarantee you. Porno is the biggest example. But like, and I know we're way off topic here, and we'll get back to Middleton for anybody that's like, what the fuck is this show?
Don't worry, I was gonna force it back.
I know.
I want to know.
But I do want to say this: if you hung out with us, but with all of our friends, and no one knew any of us, and someone said, all right, you got to go in here and you got to pick out the two professional comedians, I don't think you'd go to us first. You'd get to us first. That's and we are. Point. I don't think you would. I think you'd go porno number one. You'd be like, especially when you found out his name was Porno. You'd be like, well, fucking that guy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right about that. But yeah, no, it is funny how you just point out how derailed. Like this, I asked you about Kate Middleton. 45 seconds later, you said something about a BBL. You know what that is?
Yeah, that's how we got
here. And then dicks for the next 8 minutes or whatever. Yeah. So, no, I don't know what BBL. Also, I don't even remember the context in which you brought that acronym up.
Somebody was suggesting.
Big, beautiful lips.
No, you're kind of so close. You're dancing all around. Yeah, someone suggested that the reason she hadn't been seen is because she went to get a BBL. You were really close when you went with the big, like when you were going with the dick thing, because it's a Brazilian butt lift, which is to get a big butt, which big black dicks love. Like you're almost circular logic.
Well, then with
there.
The big, beautiful lips, I started thinking plastic surgery, and I was like, you know, how white women be just fucking doing this to their lips and shit recently. And, but yeah, I've heard of Brazilian butt lift. I should have been able to get that. So how does that knock you out of commission for a long time?
Dude, that's what I'd say.
I'm sure these thoughts get them on Friday and be back to twerking on Sunday.
Well,
you know?
There's several of these conspiracy theories that number one, you're correct on that. There's several of these conspiracy theories that I can easily knock out of the way by just logic, which your logic right there is sound. Like, yeah, she would already be back. But number two, like, I'm sorry. I know that Queen Elizabeth is dead, and therefore, like, a lot of the shroud and mystery surrounding the royal family, the veil has sort of been lifted, and we're definitely entering an even more modernized version of what a monarchy is. But Kate Middleton, even though she got her, you know, aristocratic status by marrying into the family, she 100%, in my opinion, she takes on this role, and she's not getting a fucking Brazilian butt lift, because that's not becoming of a goddamn princess. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think I agree with you.
Because people would be able to tell.
I've thought before, I don't know much at all about these people, but I've seen clips of her and stuff before where I have thought, like, wasn't she like kind of a, like, she wasn't born princess level, right?
No.
But she's really embraced this whole thing because she she conducts her, which I know that's like, I mean, that's why they hate Meghan Markle so much, is because she like don't do that. Like that's the,
that's the only reason.
Right. But you have to, those are the rules if you want to play the game with them in the first place. So it's like, was she a full blown commoner, or does this mean like owned a bank?
No, wasn't a duke.
And so, she was rich as fuck, but not a viscountess.
It's that. So, well, like the trash. word commoner here is relative. Like to the royal family, yes, absolutely a commoner. Because to the royal family, fucking Elon Musk is a commoner. You know what I mean? Because he has no aristocratic title. Now, her family, from what I read on her, and I don't remember if I did this in any type of episode here, if it was just like independently, her family, I don't think they come from like generational money, but her dad did pretty well for himself. And her mom, and by the way, everybody knows this is kind of how this show goes, but this has never been more true than now. I'm pulling this straight out of my butt. Her mom had some sort of she started some sort of like partying and catering company or something where, like, I don't know, she had something to do with kids' parties, and she created these like packages or whatever that she would sell, where it was like these individual packages, like, oh, you're having a party for 25 kids. You can buy 25 of these individual packages and you open them, and each kid, it's supplies for all the, and anyways, she turned that into like this business for like kids' parties, and like it just kind of, you know, started growing and blah, blah, blah. Turned this into like a fucking, you know, billion-dollar company empire of like selling goods for children's parties, and then got into like merchandising or whatever, sold that company. So I'm pretty sure self-made woman, but turned it into a shit ton of money. And this all happened before she met Prince William. But again, none of that matters, because to them, that is still a commoner. She did not. She was not the Duchess. What? She was not none of that.
Kate did that with the
Her mom. Her mom
what,
did.
That's what I thought you said. Yeah. But then by the end of, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, right. So she wouldn't get a BBL. Because again, I've seen.
Was a clip of that. Do you remember that clip of at the, I don't remember if it was at the Queen's funeral or his dad's coronation or something like that. There was this Asian delivery guy. Yeah. Who somehow got behind the lines where he wasn't supposed to be, and like almost got fucking shot, and he's just like slapping the bag of wontons and stuff, like, no, it's cool, whatever. And like, and anyway, and they let him go, and it went viral because it was super funny. But anyway, hey, I just remember Kate in that. I could see her awareness of like he shouldn't be here. You know what I mean? Like, right. She looked like, well, that was almost uncouth, you know, yeah. What I mean, that almost went, and I remember thinking, like, Mitch, you ain't even one of these, but like, you have to, you know, you got to assimilate.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying
let you in at all.
I'm not saying that any of it is right or wrong, but like,
which is also why, and we haven't even gotten to this yet, but if there's any kind of Princess Diana type conspiracy theories about this, whatever, they don't seem like they track to me either, because she plays the game. She's
exactly
not like, she's not like Diana or Meghan. She's like, she's a, you know, the platonic ideal of a fucking British princess or whatever, I feel like. So,
that is true, except for one of the conspiracies speculates that perhaps she was cheating on William. Yes.
That's what I was going to say. If we were going to posit our own, I was going to be like, yeah, she got caught in a lurid tryst with an Egyptian antiquities dealer, yeah, or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in a fit of rage, you know, he fucking put her into a coma by knocking her into a 16th century Chinese vase or something.
Driving through a tunnel really fast.
Yeah. Or that. And that's why there hasn't been some kind of, you know, some kind of either cover story or body double or something like that, because like she's in a coma, you know, like he put her in a coma on accident when he found out that, you know, she was porking hot med, the mummy stuff guy in my story. And
that is that's another leading theory, is that she's in a coma, that she's right. Currently in a coma. Now, here's the deal.
Waiting to see if she comes, because if she comes out of it, then they'll have a cover story and she'll play along because she plays ball and everything will be fine. But if she don't come out of it, then you know what? Then what?
And see, here's the thing. Like, all of these conspiracies started basically the moment she didn't show up for her first thing, which, like, at that point, it's like, okay, these people are QAnon level. This is insane.
But, well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, showed up for, I know you said it's like anytime he's there, she should, like, how many things has she missed? Like things that were like normally she ought to been there, but she wasn't there. Like,
I mean,
is it a bunch?
I mean, I don't have like any concrete examples, but at this point we're talking about 3 and 4 months worth of shit. Like there's been plenty of events, because dude, with these type of people, everything is a goddamn event. Like their entire life is ribbon cutting. You know what I mean? Like every day is so, dude, they have to put on 4 different tuxedos a day. You know what I mean? And she's, and dude, because the thing is, like, her life before Elizabeth died was still limelight. But when Elizabeth died, she became next in line as the queen, not queen regent, but, The queen. Well, what's the what's it when
queen consort?
Queen consort. Yeah, queen consort.
I don't know if that's right. That's definitely a term.
The queen.
But...
The queen that's not that's only the queen because her husband's the king. That right. That one. I think it's right. Queen consort. But like as soon as Charles got coronated and now William is the heir, like her life changed. And so things, you know, she is now expected to, I assume, be at more things and there's more media on her, yeah. Especially, dude, because in the middle of all of this, like while all of this is going on, another thing happened with the royal family, which is that Charles got diagnosed with cancer. That's happened right. In the middle of all of this.
And he's like Steve Jobs in it, ain't he?
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to wait your whole life?
Makes no sense.
Waiting on your mama to die so you can be the king. And it finally, she lived to be 143 and she finally dies and you get in there and you got what? Maybe 10 good years left at the outside. And then you get cancer and you're like, I'm just going to treat this with fruit and thyme. Like, that's crazy.
Maybe being king don't hit.
You can have they got to have some like king cocktails that regular people can't even get.
I think that's the point. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I ain't talking about medieval fucking newt's eye shit or whatever that the goddamn castle apothecary is coming up with. I'm talking like the same shit that Steve Jobs could have had, but didn't.
Right.
I know the King of England could get that shit. But he just chooses not to. It's like you just opting to die. It makes no sense to me.
Well, that's where Mark made me feel like a real dumbass. Cause when I shared it with the group, Mark was like, Jesus Christ, like, you know, I know he's a king, but there's not like elixirs and potions and blah, blah, blah. Right. And I was like, well, he is the king. He's probably got access to some of that stuff. And he's like, do you realize how stupid you sound right now? I was like, oh yeah, you're right. Like that stuff doesn't, that stuff is, it really expensive chemo and radiation and all that shit. And
those
like,
are the elixirs and stuff.
That is what that is. And people like, because again, if that stuff existed, Steve Jobs would have had it too. because money is the thing that those things get you.
Right. Well, Steve Jobs famously, you know, like refused, like Steve Jobs could have survived the cancer he had. It's like a known fact. The only reason he didn't is because he tried to do this alternative medicine horse shit and got himself unalived. And now the King of England is reportedly doing the same thing. They're in shambles. Cause also like what's up with Harry during all this?
Dude,
like,
Harry's, you know, him and Meghan are over here trying to get a new fucking Netflix deal. It's fucking crazy. I saw a tweet the other day. I wish I had it in front of me that was like the princess is missing. The king has cancer. If this was the 1700s, France would be looking to invade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the 1300s. Yeah. It was like the younger prince is deposed in exile. the princess is missing and the king is whatever, treating himself with herbs and tonics.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Yeah, that was a good tweet. It is wild. They're really going through some shit right now. So anyway, all right. Hey, what's the Photoshop thing?
Okay.
Element of this, because I tried to, when I first saw this, it was on Twitter and everything. I clicked was talking about pictures and Photoshops, and I couldn't
I couldn't piece together what the fuck people were talking about.
All right.
So they tried, did they put out some pictures trying to prove, like, no, she's fine? And people were like, that's clearly Photoshop. Yes. Is that what happened?
Yes. Okay. So basically, and this is what I'd been like, now for the record, like, it's really funny because of what this show is. You'd think that I would have like been following it for a little bit longer, but I kept seeing little things about it. And mostly I was just like, this is just, again, this is British QAnon bullshit. Like, it's, there's nothing to it. Like, she probably just got sick. They haven't seen her and they're making stuff up. But then again, after it went on for a little while, I was like, okay, it'd be one thing if, you know, this was the 1920s and like you had to take a picture standing still with one of those flashing things that exploded. Yeah. But like, she could easily just prove all this wrong by like stepping onto a balcony and going, hello. You know what I mean? And I was like,
I thought, you know, she could tweet a selfie or whatever. Right. You know
but
what I mean?
Not, like, I'm sure
I know it's not becoming, but I mean, I'm sure even she has a fucking cell phone or whatever. Like,
well that's where this kind of gets really funny. Cause I was like, okay, yes, true. Nobody owes anybody anything. Like, you're totally allowed for nobody to see you. That's true. But like, people are getting upset and people are being insane about this. You could just one little tweet and it's all fucking over. Well, I guess they decided we're going to do that. So they put out a Mother's Day in England, because every, you know, like everything they do, it's wrong. Their Mother's Day has already happened. It was like, okay, it was like a week or two ago or something like that. And so they put out a picture that was like, hey, everything's fine. And it was her sitting down with the kids. And allegedly, William wasn't in it because allegedly he took the picture. They put it out and it's like, oh, everything's fine. Like, the AP picked it up. They were putting it out everywhere. Like, Kate Middleton finally comes out of hiding in this picture or whatever. And there for like a solid 45 seconds, it seemed like everything was good until someone just zoomed in on it and was like, hey, look at her hand right here on her kid. And you could notice like these little waves where like it was very clear that they had Photoshopped all of them together. Like, anybody that has ever seen a Photoshop photo could 100% tell.
So that, okay, I don't know whether to take away from that, okay, AI and photo altering technologies and all these things everybody's so worried about, I guess they're still not all the way to like dystopian Matrix level yet. Like, if they're still not perfect, because you would think if anybody had access to the best like photo editing technology or capabilities, it would be the British royal family. So maybe it's just not there, which is encouraging. Or the other way to look at it is like, what the fuck are they doing having like a 14-year-old just Photoshop a super ass picture in the era of AI and photorealistic CGI and all this stuff that we know people can do with faking things?
Right.
Fakes and shit. You put out something that is noticed in 45 seconds. It's like, and you didn't think anybody was going to be able to tell? Like, it's pretty inexcusable. It is definitely weird. I mean, this is wild. Like I said, I didn't know all the details of this. This is pretty wild.
So somebody points that out, and then Kate, like, from her, or she has someone from her account put out a thing. She's like, oh, haha, I'm sorry. I'm an amateur photographer and I was trying to clean up the photograph and I just don't have good enough skills. That's on me, blah, 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 you know, whatever. And then someone pointed out, they were like, that tree in the background, that's not in bloom right now. and somebody, and this fucking like herbologist got on there and was like, yeah, this is not a current picture. That tree would not be in bloom right now. And then someone gets on there and looks at the actual picture of her face and lays it over an official picture of her from this like magazine that she'd done. And it was that picture. And these like FBI level forensics investigator confirmed like this is the same picture. So that wasn't the only thing that was Photoshopped in there.
Oh, man.
And so then immediately after that, the royal family contacts the AP press, the AP sends it out to everybody, and they put out a kill notice on the picture. They're like, this picture's got to go. It's clearly been doctored, right? So that wasn't real. And now they're speculating like, well, was that even Kate that said that shit? And like, as you said, like, dude, how the fuck are you letting this happen? They should have the best.
Right. Right. It must be something, maybe, or maybe she like, maybe she run off with the Egyptian antiquities dealer or something like that. Maybe she's in hiding with her paramour or something. Yeah. Because otherwise I don't. Yeah, they seem to be mishandling it. You have to know it's going to get noticed. It already has been noticed. It's only going to become more and more scrutinized. You got to have something. You got to have some kind of plan of action for this, and it definitely seems like they don't. And so, I mean, what the fuck is going to happen?
Like I said, at first, I was like, these are people just hungry for there to be some type of conspiracy theory, and the royal family is like such fertile soil for all of that shit, what with, you know, Diana and all that shit. But like at this point, it would be more bizarre if nothing was going on.
Right.
Because how do you fumble nothing is going on and we are fucking up and making it seem like something's going on?
I mean, there's no way. It's like you said, she could just step outside and wave, like you said, or whatever, and it would take care of it. And the fact that she hasn't seems to indicate that something is up. That's what I'm saying. It's weird that they don't even have a cover story. It makes me feel like there's loose ends here. You know what I mean? Like they can't put out a cover story because it could later be proven false because either she is out of pocket.
Yes.
Or they can't control her. Or is in a coma or something. And they don't know whether or not she's going to come out of it yet. So they can't, you know what I'm saying? They can't, they can't cover it up in the wrong direction, because otherwise, why would you not have a cover story? You surely would.
I know. Especially, I mean, again, these people, like, they have cover stories for fucking everything. They've been sidestepping the Andrew bullshit for years, man. Like the NFL Combine, like they've been masterfully doing that. And another one last note again, and this is again, like I say, this is all that I know about it, which is nothing. I just know the speculation. But I thought this was interesting. Stephen Colbert is under fire from a lot of people in the British press because Colbert did a joke about all this stuff, like a lighthearted, you know, monologue joke or whatever. And they were, a lot of people in the British tabloid press and caught wind from the royal family that they'd made a comment. They were astounded and surprised that Colbert had not sought their permission to make this joke, because that's standard practice over there, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, over there, the media and them. Yeah, right. The media and them have an understanding. Like, they don't say anything about the royal family unless they run it past him. And for some reason, they try to act like 1776 never fucking happened. That's what I was about to
say. Like, you forget that L we handed y'all? Like, we're going to ask y'all for shit. But also, my thing with that is, like, there is a 0% chance that that is the first late-night royal family joke that's ever been made in American history. Like, I guarantee you David Letterman was bagging on fucking,
for sure,
Charles back then in the 90s and shit. You know what I mean? Charles and Camilla and all that stuff.
Right.
You tell me that wasn't fodder for late night stuff. Like, it had to be. Sure. You know?
We just probably didn't hear about it because of Twitter, I guess.
I guess, yeah, maybe that. Yeah, maybe they didn't deign to watch American television back then. But now, yeah, things are unavoidable. I don't know.
This here episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Let's talk about sex, bae, buzz. Guys, remember the days when you're always ready to go? Things change as you get older, but that's all right. They don't have to. Now you can increase your performance and get that extra old-timey confidence in bed back in your early day type stuff. Listen up, BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead, or you can just be ready to get down whenever an opportunity comes up. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. That's the best part. It's all done down there on the internet there. Which means no more visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made here in the U.S. of A, prepared and shipped direct to your door in a very discreet package. Cho, tell them more.
I tell you what, Trey, I love it. It makes my weenie harder than trying to figure out what's going on with Kate Middleton. I tell you, it works. It's tremendous. And by the way, If you're skeptical, you can try it for a month and see for yourself. But my absolute favorite time of the month and my wife's favorite time is when that discreet envelope shows up. I've been using Blue Chew for about 5 months. And the thing is, there don't have to be nothing wrong with your wiener to use it. You can just get a little extra confidence because they say first impressions are important. Well, what about lasting impressions? They say there's nothing sexier than confidence, and Blue Chew can help give you the confidence where it counts. Blue Chew wants to help you have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it. We got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew for free when you use our promo code POA at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code POA to receive your first month for free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast and giving us a brand new wiener. Skew.
Speaking of American media, you wanted to talk about the Oscars, right? They just happened 6 days ago, 5 days ago, and when this comes out. I had shows in D.C., so I didn't watch a second of it, but I do know who most of the winners were and whatnot.
Oh, I didn't watch any of it either.
Oh, okay. Well, you said you wanted to talk about it.
I do. Buddy, that's not ever stopped us before.
All right. I know. I used to, you know, my dad, the video store, big movie person, everything growing up, we used to watch the Oscars together like every single year. I used to watch the Oscars every year. Like, I made it a point to watch it like a Super Bowl or something for me, but I probably haven't done that in, I'd say, at least 7 or 8 years now, maybe more.
I was going to say me not watching it is actually a subject I wanted to cover, and you sort of just answered it there. I got the highlights because that's what I do now. Like, I'm not like, look, it's not something Amber's interested in, so I'm not going to make Amber sit through 3 hours of something that I can then get. I treat the Oscars like I treat the NFL draft, like that Bill Burr thing. Like, I'm not going to sit through it when tomorrow I can get all the highlights of the things that I wanted to see. But that's what I was going to ask you, because, like, dude, I'm the same way. The Oscars, to me, I won't say that I treated it exactly like the Super Bowl, but I did get very fucking excited because, like, you know, obviously me and you are not like we are technically in the same industry because it's under it's under the umbrella of the entertainment industry. And it is something that both of us aspire to. Like, me and you both have had dreams of sitting there, accepting one or just being invited. But like, so to me, it's always been something that I felt at least a little a part of, like, oh, this is our thing. And as stupid as that sounds, like it just feels that way. But I stopped. I mean, I just kind of stopped watching. I think maybe it has because of the age of like the internet, where like instead of watching, I can just watch something else and kind of see it live tweeted. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, well, if something really cool happens, I'll get to see that and I don't have to, because, dude, most of it is boring. Like, most of it is boring.
Yep. Yes, that's true. I think for me personally, it was just a matter of, like, I became less of a movie buff over the course of my life, which I've always attributed to the rise of television. The time I used to spend watching movies, because I used to watch like every fucking thing that came out. I had a huge back catalog of stuff, like a lot of classics and stuff I hadn't seen, especially if you're talking about, like, I've seen Casablanca and I've seen Citizen Kane. But if you're talking about like that era of movies, there's tons that I hadn't seen. But the modern era, though, from my teen years into like my 30s, I've watched like everything, trash and artsy fartsy shit alike. But then TV started hitting so hard,
right?
And I started watching more and more TV shows, and which meant I watched less and less movies. And I kind of just fell out of cinema and into television. And I've always just attributed that to my life. Cause I used to watch every single Best Picture nominee every year. Like, of course, made a point to, if I hadn't seen it, I'd look it up. I'd watch all the foreign nominees, the anime, any movie that, you know, that was nominated, I made it a point to watch
for Best Picture. Correct.
Also,
not
like
costume.
No, not like costume. I mean, a movie that was nominated on the movies, like the best animated pictures. Right. I'd watch all those too. The best foreign movies. I'd get those short from Netflix. Not the shorts. The shorts are hard to find. Probably not now.
Not anymore, yeah.
Not now. They're probably right at your fingertips. But back then, it was hard to get your hands on the shorts. But yeah, I was a Netflix subscriber since 2003, like getting the DVDs in the mail. Too. I was in high school getting the DVDs in the mail. And so I would use Netflix to get those more obscure movies and shit. But anyway, yeah, that just kind of changed. Now I only watch the big one. Like this year's nominees, I saw
8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm nowhere close to that. I saw Oppenheimer, of course. I saw Barbie. I saw Poor Things, The Holdovers, and Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
I've seen 5. That's it, I think.
Surprisingly, one of the ones, the one that I like wanted to see the most, I still haven't seen, which is American Fiction. And the only reason is because me and Amber want to watch it together. And they that time hasn't lined up, which this is a very frustrating thing for a movie lover, is like whenever there's a movie that I know it's not an Amber thing, I get excited because I'm like, well, I can just watch that any fucking time. But when there's one where Amber's like, oh, I want to watch that too, now I'm like, I have to find this moment. Yeah. And it'll be at night. And she's like, hey, do you want to start that movie? And I'll be like, OK, can you give me 2 hours right now? Because a lot of times what will happen is we'll put on a movie and 35 minutes in, she's like, oh, I totally forgot. I need to go blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, can we just wait till you got 2 hours? You know, so I haven't seen that one, even though it's one of the ones that I really wanted to see. But loved Anatomy of a Fall. Hey, while we're here, though, and you're already talking about having seen Oppenheimer, that was one of the things I wanted to discuss, because, I mean, unless I'm mistaken, this used to be a thing that happened quite a bit, I guess. But over the past couple of years, maybe not so much. Oppenheimer won for Best Picture this year, and I feel like it has become less and less of a thing for a movie that made almost $1 billion to also win the Best Picture, and I love it.
So glad that you said that, because that was one of the I knew we were going to talk about the Oscars, and that was a thing that I had written down in my notes that I wanted to talk about, was that dynamic. You are right. Now, for years and years, a lot of times, stuff that hit
Titanic
box office wise was also
Gone with the Wind.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, for a long time, that's just all it was.
That's why it made basically the money.
Right, exactly. And then that changed at the beginning with the blockbuster era, which most people think started with Jaws, Steven Spielberg. It's wild. Steven Spielberg will kind of bookend this story, because a lot of people think the blockbuster era was ushered in by Steven Spielberg with Jaws. And of course, Star Wars really kicked it into high gear. And then things changed from that point, right?
Dude, can I tell you something about Jaws real quick? Because I don't know if I'll ever get the opportunity again.
Yeah.
I've been reading a lot of old movie stuff. And did you know that even like right before it was about to be edited and like come out, everyone involved with Jaws, Steven Spielberg included, was like almost wanted to distance themselves from the movie because they thought that it was going to suck. And yeah. I heard
part,
that
partly because it was such a nightmare shoot.
The
shark didn't work, and he didn't get all kinds of stuff he wanted, and everything kept fucking up. And you know, yeah, they were not confident.
And I heard that said in the context to illustrate the point of like, you'd never know. You fucking never know. So, anyways, go on.
No, you don't. But yeah, so, but in the '90s. Though there was a stretch where it was Oppenheimer style movies Forrest Gump beat Pulp Fiction, right? Braveheart beat Sense and Sensibility, right? And Titanic beat whatever, right? And all three of those movies were like three of the biggest movies of the year. They also won Best Picture. And then in 1998, Steven Spielberg put out Saving Private Ryan, which was the biggest movie of the year and was a Best Picture nominee and seemed to be a shoe-in, right? And at the same time, Harvey Weinstein at the Weinstein Company had put out Shakespeare in Love.
That's the screenplay, by the way.
And launched a heretofore unheard of PR blitz and marketing campaign for Shakespeare in Love, which ultimately resulted in it winning and beating Saving Private Ryan because Steven Spielberg refused to play those games. Nowadays, there's Oscar season.
Yeah.
Oscar campaigning is a thing. There was kind of a bit of a kerfuffle last year with that. What's her name? Rachel Gainsborough or something like that. She was in that movie with Marc Maron, fucking Rachel something or other. There was a big coordinated blitz from all these like A-listers trying to get her an Oscar, basically.
It backfired.
And it did backfire because people were like, well, this is a little fucking egregious. But that
Bradley
type of shit
for this year,
that type of shit, it's like accepted now. It didn't used to be a thing. That started with Shakespeare in Love and Harvey Weinstein. That was Harvey Weinstein's idea in 1998. And Steven Spielberg, he started what's called a whisper campaign, which is where you talk shit about your opposing nominees. And he's like, that movie's nothing but the opening scene at the beach, the battle at the storm in the beaches. Then it's 2.5 hours of sentimental bullshit, right? Which I could not more heartily disagree
with. That's the worst thing he's ever done, by the way.
I know. That's what I was going to say. It's like, to me, this is the worst thing far and away that Harvey Weinstein's ever done. Nothing else even comes close but he started that. This was going on, and the people at the studio with Spielberg saw this and knew it, like recognized what was happening. And they told Spielberg, they were like, Harvey's doing this shit. He's got a plan. He's trying to scoop you with Shakespeare in Love or whatever. You need to push back. And Steven Spielberg was like, I'm not doing that.
I don't care.
Yeah. He's like, my movie will speak for itself. I'm not going to play these fucking games with Harvey. Like, I made the movie. The movie stands on its own merits. I'm not doing that shit. And they were like, okay, you might lose, though. And he was like, that's the way it's going to be. Fuck it. Yeah, right. And then it did lose. And I remember, like I said, I watched every one of these. My dad, I was 12 years old that year. My dad was irate, bro. Yeah. It was like watching your team get upset in the Super Bowl or something. He was like, what the fuck is this shit? But he didn't know all the backstory with Harvey Weinstein and stuff. But he was like, this is horse shit. And that kind of shifted the way the Oscars worked forevermore. Another thing that happened, though, was that blockbusters became... There aren't a lot of movies like Oppenheimer or Barbie.
There's
most
not.
Years. Most of the movies that make $1 billion are
Marvel.
Like tape movies that are not Best Picture worthy. So that
I think Endgame was Best Picture worthy, in my opinion. But
you think what was?
Endgame. But But you had to, in fairness to everyone else on Earth, you would have had to follow 15 movies. So,
well, there's like, every now and then there'll be something like that. Like the Lord of the Rings movies were like that. They were colossal blockbusters that people are like, these also hit.
Right.
But like, the two things have gotten separated kind of culturally in the cinematic world. And so that's why you don't see it happening as much. But I also find it, nice that it happened. Also, another movie, it was like that. The reason why we have 10 Best Picture nominees now instead of five, it was five for years and years and years, was because a blockbuster, people were pissed off when it was not nominated for Best Picture in 2008, and that was The Dark Knight by Christopher Nolan. The Dark Knight was not nominated, and people were like, this is horseshit.
And who won that year?
I'll look it up.
Keep talking.
2008. I don't know. I mean, when you say it, I'll know. But
I can tell you this: it wasn't as good as Dark Knight. Oh yeah, it was. Right. No Country for Old Men. Never mind.
Oh yeah,
that was good. Fine. But it should have been fucking nominated. But that's
Then people got so pissed off, they expanded the field to 10 movies, and they call that the Dark Knight rule. That's why. And since then, you've had like Black Panther was nominated. Joker was nominated, so shit like that does slide in there every now and then now. But yeah, you're right. It is not often the case anymore that like a huge blockbuster also wins and deserves to win Best Picture, when that used to be the standard for a long, long time. But
now,
things have changed, buddy.
Now, granted, it's also not normal for a historical biopic to be a huge blockbuster. It's just that, and this is another thing I wanted to talk about, it's just that this historical biopic happened to be directed by one Christopher Nolan, who picked up his first directorial Oscar, and I say a resounding...
Yes.
The man.
Yes, quite.
Well-deserved.
Damn, that was Christopher Nolan's first Oscar.
First Oscar. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of my favorite all time. And I know we've talked about it before, but not on here. One of my favorite all time Academy Awards fun facts was that 3-6 Mafia won an Oscar before Martin Leo. Scorsese did.
Yeah.
Before Scorsese, even.
Yeah.
I mean, Leo, too, before both of them. But dude, yeah.
And speaking of that, Scorsese got swept again. Which I'm starting, you're talking about the Oscar campaigns, which kind of sort of leads into a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. And this is something that I've felt with DiCaprio for a while, and now possibly Martin Scorsese, is that I kind of think it almost has to be this way, that perhaps DiCaprio has a very, I'll let my work speak for itself opinion of himself, much like Spielberg.
Yeah.
Or it's just that DiCaprio has the unfortunate skill of, he's so fucking good all the time. He's consistently good all the time. It's just that every year that every year that he's good, someone will come out of nowhere and be good for the first time ever, and it just be great.
It's kind of, to use a sports analogy, people have football fans have pointed out, obviously this isn't true anymore, but during the Brady era of the
Eli
Patriots,
Manning,
but it's like, I'm talking about coaches, Bill Belichick. Yeah. Like, if you look at most of the years from 2001 to 2019 or whatever, with a couple of genuine exceptions, most of those years, objectively speaking, the coach of the year should have been Bill Belichick, right? Like, it's hard to argue otherwise, but he only won like a couple because of what you were just saying. It was like, it was just their standard. It's just what was expected. He's doing what he would, but then somebody would take a lovable loser and take him to the playoffs or something, and they get coach of the year because it's a better story and they haven't been there before and all that.
Even though he never fell off.
Exactly. Right.
His standard was so good that when he keeps doing that, no one even notices that it's good because they expect him to be that good. You know what I mean? Yeah. They expect him to hit. And but I'm thinking when we're talking about snubs, not only like I saw a lot of the movies. I think Killers of the Flower Moon was awesome. Like, cinematically, it was great. It was a great story. I think everybody in it murdered. Now, I will say this, and this is not a criticism. It's just like, it's the type of movie that it is. I don't know that I'll watch it again because it's
brutal and bleak.
It's brutal and bleak and shit.
I've just not been in a headspace for that type of movie ever since it came out. Like, totally I understand that about it. I love Scorsese. I think I've seen literally all of Scorsese's other movies. I will watch it eventually, but I just haven't watched. Because anytime I sit down to watch it, I'm like, I don't want to bum myself out for 3.5 hours.
And it's wild, like, because Scorsese to me is like one of the all-time kings of the rewatchable movie. Like almost every
The Departed, Goodfellas, even Shutter Island,
like, it's a different headspace, but like, whenever I'm just like wanting to throw some shit on, like, I can't tell you how many times me and Bane have watched Shutter Island because I was like, today I want a psychological thriller and I kind of just want to be tweeting on my phone. Like, all of his movies are like perfect to rewatch. But this one, again, though, if you want to go for just like, wow, this is a visually stunning movie in which he pulled performances, like, dude, Jason Isbell killed it. And I'm not saying that Jason Isbell's not a talented person who worked hard, but like, I think it speaks to Scorsese that he took a person who is not an actor and pulled that performance out of him. I don't think that any old director would have got Jason Isbell, who's a guitar man, to hit like that. Like, I think there's a lot of people that watched it and just thought, oh, here's an actor that I've never seen before. But he gets swept, and Leonardo DiCaprio, back to my point, who I thought it was one of his best performances ever, because it's Leonardo DiCaprio playing completely against type. He's playing a hateable motherfucker and a dipshit. Didn't even get fucking nominated, dude, which I think is crazy.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to find, I know one of them, Martin Scorsese, he didn't win for a long, long time, despite hitting for a very long time before that. Right. And that's how 3-6 Mafia won before him. I'm trying to look up the movies that beat his movies, you know. The only one I know off the top of my head, because I made a note of it earlier, was that, you know what Goodfellas lost to?
Okay, good. Hold on. Tell me what year Goodfellas came out in.
I think that 91.
If it came out in
91, Oscars, I think.
Came out in 91, it would have lost to The English Patient.
Now, The English Patient was few years after that, because I remember The English Patient year, they called that one Sundance by the Sea, I think, because I don't think there were any like blockbusters that year or whatever. And I remember that wasn't hitting for
Schindler's List.
No, you're closer there. It was Dances with Wolves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is one of those movies that's like, you know,
fuck that.
Right.
A fucking 3.5 exercise in guilt.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
White Savior classic. It's also, you know, the same story's been told a million times over.
A million times.
He's only won once for best director, and it was with The Departed.
Yeah, and they call that one, that was like his "here you go," because a lot of people shit when he won that. They were like, he didn't even really deserve it. I'm like, are you fucking serious?
I know. I don't.
It's like his best one.
To me, it's absolutely at least one of his best.
That is not the narrative.
I know. I didn't know that until recently.
I told you, I think.
I found out. I heard some people on a podcast presenting that argument, like the argument that The Departed, he shouldn't have won for that one because it don't really hit that hard.
Yes, it does.
That's I know. Insane. I'm with you. It's like, it ain't my favorite. I'm not going to put it over Goodfellas or nothing, but it's not up there.
But here's the
it's
thing.
Like it, up
but
if there you, with it.
Okay. Maybe don't put it over Goodfellas, but if you do, that's not stupid or wrong. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people go, well, like, oh, you can't even compare it to Goodfellas. I'm like, yeah, you can. You totally can. It's a good fucking movie. Like, dude, The Departed to me is like this. It's almost like The Sopranos of movies. And I say that because it's something that you don't go into expecting to be an almost comedy the whole time.
Right.
It's funny as
so
fuck,
funny,
dude.
Dude, Mark Wahlberg is hilarious in that fucking movie. That's you're talking about Scorsese and pulling. Like I like Mark Wahlberg. I do. I like Mark and his funky bunch. Like I got no problem with it. Like I like Mark Wahlberg well enough, but you know he's not a master thespian.
No,
or anything. But he rocks in that movie.
Yeah,
and you know Scorsese, that's his all time best performance. That and Boogie Nights. You know,
PTA.
Paul Thomas Anderson. He's good at that. Good at that type of thing too. So,
speaking of which, because you don't watch a lot of news or read a lot of things, this will get you rock hard. They just announced PTA's new movie is going to be starring Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, not did they say what it's about?
No, but who gives a shit? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, you're right. Who cares? But yeah, no, I mean, like you know, again, like I think The Departed might be if I had to rank like a list of like the most rewatchable movies ever. Departed's like. If it's not one, it's 1A or 1B, you know what I mean? Like, it's fucking awesome. So, like, to say that that was his, like, oh, here's a makeup award. Like, imagine hitting so hard that The Departed is your makeup award. That's fucking nuts
to
me.
Just a couple of examples. Raging Bull was his first, like, majorly nominated thing, and that lost out to Ordinary People. The drama directed by Robert Redford. I've never seen it, but I have heard of it. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's...
You're bringing up another good point here.
Pretty well regarded.
The legacy of some of these movies that won versus the one that they beat. Because I would argue that Shakespeare in Love's legacy was hurt by it winning. Because now that movie is only regarded as like, oh, that's the movie that swept in and beat the better movie. Saving Private Ryan's legacy is that's one of the best movies of all time. When people think of Shakespeare in Love, they just think about that's that bullshit Weinstein pulled to fucking win this shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like Spielberg still won. That movie still probably makes him more money than Shakespeare in Love does.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably right. Well, so that was another thing I wrote down. Things I wanted, like what you just said, movies that didn't win or should have won or whatever. You know, famously, Citizen Kane did not win Best Picture.
They hated him, dude.
It was beat out by How Green Is My Valley, a coal mining drama that came out right after like Grapes of Wrath and that type of shit. You know, it was in the vein. I mean, I've never seen that one.
Can
either,
I tell you why he lost?
Well, yeah.
He lost
because he didn't hit for them?
No, the members of the Academy, oh, my Lord. All their names are evading me right now. But so many members of the Academy, including Louis B. Mayer, who Louis B. Mayer was a huge member of the Academy. It was actors and producers. And they say like, oh, we started it for the integrity of, you know, this to promote films. And at first it was like set up as a quasi like union. But then the actual union happened because they were like, y'all aren't really doing anything. You're just kind of jerking everybody off. But Louis B. Mayer would later say, like, I'll just be straight up honest with you. The reason I cared so much about the Academy was because handing out trophies was a great way to get actors and directors to do what I wanted without having to give them any more money. He's like, you could dangle. He's like, you could dangle. He goes, these people would do anything if I just whispered Oscar buzz. They'd do anything. And I didn't have to give them any fucking money. But when Orson Welles comes along, you got to understand he's 24, 25. He was a Broadway fucking guy. He comes in, he gets the most lucrative deal anyone's ever had with Final Cut. And that's the most important thing. Nobody had Final Cut. They're giving it to someone on his fucking directorial debut. He makes all these demands. He gets it. He was shaking up the Hollywood elite. He was shaking up the system. He was shaking up everything. And because of that, the brass just did not like the guy. And those were the people who were making the votes, and they didn't want to make him happy. They didn't want to make him win, because by letting him win, it was saying this is how it should be done. And they wanted to squash that.
Yeah, that checks out. So Gangs of New York lost to Chicago.
Gangs of New York didn't hit.
Right. It was fine.
I
mean,
I about to say, I thought it was fine, but
it was fine.
You know.
But Chicago didn't hit either.
The Aviator lost to Million Dollar Baby.
I liked Aviator.
It's not egregious.
I get why Million Dollar Baby won. Yeah.
Scorsese's not in 2005, but I want to talk about 2005 for a second, because it was the year that it was widely regarded, from what I've seen and read over the years.
Traffic.
I think you're thinking of the right movie, but calling it the wrong name.
Crash.
Crash. Widely regarded as the worst Best Picture winner of all time, because it's an overly sentimental and condescending look at American racism that's, just super up its own ass in a way that nobody really needed or appreciated. But one Best Picture over the other nominees in 2005 were Brokeback Mountain, Capote.
That movie was up its own ass, too. Hey.
Good Night and Good Luck, and Munich, which Munich is heavily underrated, bro.
Munich's good.
Munich fucking goes hard.
I apologize for, I was trying to do a bit in the middle of that, and I'm an asshole. Good Night and Good Luck, Capote, Munich, Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, that's him. Those four lost to Crash.
All of them are better so than much better. Yeah. Not better. So much better.
Yeah, right. And then in 2006, he finally won for The Departed. But another interesting note, talking about directors and losing whatnot, something that I've never heard anybody else point out, but I just found this earlier, and they didn't even point it out in this context. It was just looking up things like Oscar snubs, who got beat by who, whatever. And I've never seen Buzz point this out, but I put this together, so I'm going to take credit for this until somebody proves to me that this has been pointed out before. All right, I'm sure people have thought of it, but I haven't heard one say it. Spike Lee kind of lost to fucking Driving Miss Daisy twice in his career. Because Spike Lee's big name-breaking movie was Do the Right Thing, right? Seminal movie in American cinema and everything. It's a great, I love Do the Right Thing. The movie's awesome. And it wasn't even nominated, which was seen as like a massive snub even at the time. People are like, oh, the old crusty ass white Academy just can't handle this, hip, telling it like it is, speaking truth to power black movie or whatever, which
that's
is
weird.
True.
I was told people didn't get offended by things like that back then, but you're right. Telling me that they did. That's crazy.
So that year, actual Driving Miss Daisy won, right? Which again, it's like, it's fine, but it's like a, it's a very,
that
like,
was the, that was the magical Negro era.
Exactly. Right. Yes. It's the type of thing that I don't think, really holds up.
No.
Right. It's like, it's
dude,
a very,
Jessica Tandy rules, but like, and so does Morgan Freeman. But like,
yeah.
You come on.
Right. And then years later, and like, I don't know without looking it up, 2017 ish or 18 ish, something like that.
Spike Lee
was nominated for Black Klansman. Which is great.
It's
great
so
movie.
Good. It's so
great
good.
Movie. And that year he got beat by Green Book, which is kind of just sort of bizarro Driving Miss Daisy, sort of like it's very simple. So it's like basically, and that got shit on a lot too. And that look, I'm a big Farrelly brothers stan.
Me too.
I love Peter Farrelly. I think Green Book is a pretty good movie that I think got shit on a little too much for all that, but it still is that type of thing. And so anyway, I just think I've never heard anybody else point that out. And I have to imagine Spike Lee, like I'd love to have a private conversation with him about what his actual feelings about
me
that
too.
Are. Cause I bet he would, he could really go in. Cause that's pretty funny.
He said some foul stuff that second time. I promise you that. Hey, speaking of which stuff, Farley got a new one out that is the polar opposite of Green Book. That Ricky Stenicki, that's his.
No,
it's a new Cena movie. I've said that.
Yes, I said that.
If you don't mind, because we can't get out of here without at least mentioning the Cena part of the Oscars. Did you hear about that?
So
he come out butt naked, right? And yep. people are speculating it was to support the costumers union or something like that, but he didn't publicly say that, but that was the assumption. Is that?
Oh, that would make more sense. No, people were publicly speculating.
I saw, or that's what Katie said.
No, everyone was talking about how Cat Williams was right, and that was a humiliation ritual that he was having to do in order to cater to those that pay him.
According to Katie, the costumers union, or, you know, whatever, you know, we've been having a lot of strikes and labor issues and stuff out here recently. And apparently the costumers are next up, or at least attempting to be. And again, he didn't say either of those things publicly. Of course, he didn't say he was being publicly humiliated. But Katie told me that the speculation was that he was, because he presented best costume.
Yeah.
That was the thing he was doing. And their whole thing is, their like union slogan thing that they have, like their rallying cry, is something like, "You're naked without us." That's their thing. It's like Costumers Union, "You're naked without us." Like trying to, you should appreciate us more. That's their thing. He was presenting their award. He came out naked. Katie said people were speculating as a show of solidarity. What you said is much, much juicier, though.
And it's a lot of, people with a lot of, big platforms were like, this is all this is, like, it's a humiliation. This is his Illuminati shit. And it's just like, it's so bananas for number one. It's like, dude, you think John Cena with that body was humiliated to come out naked?
Of course.
He's a fucking hilarious dude. And also, I'm sorry, and I'm definitely not the only one that's going to have this take. That motherfucker worked for Vince McMahon for 20 years. Yeah. Yeah. He's been humiliated enough. This don't even come close. Anyways, go on.
Oh, I mean, no, that was it. That's all I had heard about that. Oh, I agree with what you just said.
I meant with you were on a roll doing other Oscar stuff. I just wanted to mention John Cena.
I was covering like notable snubs and Martin Scorsese's history and everything, but I got through all the end of that, basically.
Did you see Pacino's flub?
No, I did hear about it. He did an I'm Ron Burgundy type thing.
It was when Oppenheimer wins, and he gets up there and, like, I don't know if he was drunk or old or both. I think just old. I mean, probably drunk. Dude, if I don't know at what age I'm going to completely let go.
Yeah.
I'll know it, and everyone else will know it too, I promise. But he gets up there and, like, they're like, you know, now presenting best picture, you know, Al Pacino, whatever. And he gets up there and, like, you know, there probably wasn't many people in the room that had been to more Academy Awards than Al Pacino. You know the deal.
Right.
You go up there, they read the nominees so that they can flash the camera to everybody, build some suspense, make everyone reminded of, like, what's at stake here. This motherfucker goes straight up to the podium, grabs the envelope, opens it, and just goes, "My eyes see Oppenheimer." and everyone just kind of looks around, and all of a sudden everybody just kind of starts clapping a little bit, and they play the music, and fucking Christopher Nolan wins for Oppenheimer. And that was it. Didn't announce nobody, and fucking show's over.
Well, I mean, hell, get it over with. You know?
I mean, I agree with him, you know, but just fucking super funny to me.
Let's see, 2009. Let's look at Tarantino's.
Please. So
Oscar,
he lost for Pulp Fiction.
Oscar history. Yeah, to Forrest Gump, which is one of those that's like,
you get it.
I do get it. Like, I'm not gonna act like that's crazy or egregious.
That's not crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's one of those in hindsight, you go, well, Pulp Fiction's better. And it's like, yeah, but at the time, dude, like, Forrest Gump was like, it took the world by storm. And by the way, I'm a Forrest Gump apologist. I love that goddamn movie.
I do too. I'll always love that movie.
It's great.
Came out when we were kids. There's too much sentimental and nostalgic value in it for me to ever
judge it. Yeah.
Think it hits. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. No, I'm the same way. Let's see. Academy Awards. Yeah. So he was nominated for Pulp Fiction and lost to Forrest Gump. And then he was nominated again. And this is the one that I actually saw that made me bring it up. He was nominated for Inglorious Bastards, which is his next nomination. 100%. And some of these movies are good, dude. Some of them. This was the first year after they instituted the Dark Knight rules. So this is the first year they had 10 nominees.
Right.
Inglourious Basterds was nominated, did not win. Here are the other nominees. I'll end with the winner. And to me, Inglourious Basterds is much better. Well, it's better than all of these. So here are the other nominees. Up in the Air, the George Clooney.
I liked it, but
it's good. It's a good
not
movie.
Even close, though.
Up, Pixar classic, okay. For sure.
Is there another Up one?
No, I mean, no, just those two. But yeah, same here. A Serious Man, the Coen brothers.
Love it.
Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Didn't see it. Same classic.
Yeah, right. It is an FDDH classic.
And Education, which is the Carey Mulligan movie that I did see at the time. I don't remember. It's a British coming-of-age drama.
No idea.
That, like, broke Carey Mulligan. District 9, love that fucking movie. Love it. I just rewatched District 9 with my sons, like, last week. They loved it, too.
They write that down.
That movie fucking rock. You ain't ever seen District 9?
That's with, bro. That's with dude from,
District 9.
John Boyega, isn't he in that?
Who?
Isn't John Boyega?
No, that's Attack the Block.
Okay.
Which also rules, write that down too. I just watched both of those movies with my boys in the past 2 weeks, funnily enough.
By the way,
District 9 is Neil Blomkamp, a South African director.
Yeah.
It was his first movie. It starred this guy who was not an actor, Charlton Copley. He became an actor because he kicked so much ass in this movie. You've seen him and stuff since then.
Uh-huh.
It's about alien refugees in South Africa. And they live in like the slums and okay. It's fucking wild. It rules, dude. It's like action packed and filled with social commentary and stuff. I fucking love that movie.
I still like
Inglourious Bastards better. I got three left. Okay. The Blind Side. No,
fuck no, dude. Right. Especially considering the all of it.
Right. Yeah. The Michael Oher, the guy it's about, was like, that movie ain't, I'm not R worded. You know?
Right.
Avatar, and then the winner was The Hurt Locker, which is a good movie.
Right.
But Inglourious Bastards is better than all of the. I would rank those Inglourious Bastards, District 9, and then the rest of them in some order. That's what I would put. But
yeah, I'm not even going to say what I was going to say. But yes, you are correct. Inglourious Bastards have fucking won that. Because Inglourious Bastards, like, it's... I go back and forth on which is my favorite Tarantino movie. However, usually it ends up coming back to me going, I mean, it's Inglourious Bastards.
Me too. Well, I've told you before, maybe even on here, like, I think it'll always be Inglourious Bastards for me because that also happens to be the last movie I ever saw in a movie theater with my dad. So nothing's ever going to top that for me. He turned me on to Quentin Tarantino. We're both huge Tarantino fans. So, yeah. Speaking of Tarantino, he was nominated again for Django Unchained in 2012 and did not win.
Let me guess. He ought to.
Yeah. Yes. There's some hitters in this lineup, though. But, I mean, I still think Django Unchained is probably the best of them. The winner was Argo. I like Argo.
I like Argo, too.
Argo's a good movie. Lincoln, Steven Spielberg, Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis was another one that year. The Les Miserables remake with Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman. Silver Linings Playbook, David O. Russell, Jennifer Lawrence. Zero Dark Thirty. And then Life of Pi, Beast of the Southern Wild, and Amour.
Oh, yes, Amour.
Yeah, I don't know Amour. I don't remember Amour.
I assume it's a French movie, meaning love.
Seems like it, yes. And then his next and final nominations were for... Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which lost to Parasite. I mean, bro, Parasite is a fucking great movie.
Yeah.
Dude, this year was stacked.
Yeah.
Parasite, Ford versus Ferrari, that's a really good movie, too. The Irishman, so Scorsese and Tarantino, both in there. I like The Irishman. Jojo Rabbit rules.
Yeah, it does.
Joker's good. I never saw the Little Women remake, sue me. And then... I never saw Marriage Story either. Same reason.
Yeah.
But 1917.
Okay.
1917 goes fucking hard.
Dude, so I can't believe I'm about to say this.
That's a stacked year right there.
I can't believe I'm about to say this. And I also didn't see the same two movies that you didn't see. Sue me. But I can't believe I'm about to say this, but Scorsese genuinely had the weakest movie out of all those.
I agree with you. Maybe not Joker, but the rest of them I definitely agree with.
Only because I'm comparing it to other Scorsese movies. I think that if I just look at Joker and The Irishman like independently, maybe I agree. But I really like The Joker. Now, what hurt The Joker for me was how much so many people I hate like the Joker.
And yes.
I try not to let that affect me, but it's so hard for it not to affect me.
The other thing about it is, I don't know if you've seen this movie. It's funny. You're comparing it to Scorsese. Joker is good. That movie is pretty much just the king of comedy. The 1980s Scorsese
Dude, you're right.
movie starring
it's
Robert
Pumpkin.
De Niro.
He plays Pumpkin.
And then De Niro is even
he's Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Wow.
And that, the fact that De Niro got cast in that role makes it seem like what's his name? The director. He directed The Hangover. Todd Phillips, right?
Todd Phillips. Yeah.
It makes it seem like Todd Phillips
knew and was doing
that. He was like, no, this is an homage. But it's right. Bro, I feel like it goes a little past homage. Like, it's kind of the same movie.
It's exactly the same movie.
I know.
It's almost like Rupert Pupkin, after he got out of jail, ended up getting the late night show, grew up, and then that happened to him. Well, now, hold on, just make that canon, and the movie hits.
Yeah, I guess
but,
you're right.
But the Irishman dude, like, now I'm very glad that I took Neil Brennan's advice, which was to watch the Irishman as if it was a four-part miniseries. Neil put out like a guide. He watched it and timestamped it and gave the timestamps like titles. And he's like, watch it. And I did. Yeah. And I was like, this was great. Cause dude, it's a goddamn slog if you don't.
Yeah. It's also like, you know, a lot was made of the de-aging technology. Some of it did not work out. Like Robert De Niro, when he's supposed to be young, whipping
punching that
doctor's ass.
Didn't work.
Is one of the most unintentionally comedic things I've ever seen. Because he could not possibly look more like a papaw.
Shoot it from the back and have a different guy.
When he throws that gun in the river, too, he's also supposed to be young. And he's like, it looks so papaw-y because he's a goddamn papaw. You're just using computers to de-papaw him, but you can't hide a papaw.
You can't.
But all that aside, I did really like it. And also another thing I thought about The Irishman, and again, I did like it, but I kept thinking, I was like, dude, if this movie didn't have the pedigree it has,
yes,
it would be bordering on self-parody.
Yes.
Of
Scorsese.
Of Scorsese and De Niro, and all those guys.
All of them.
It was like they would, they felt
it would
like
be like Scary Movie.
It was like they were teetering so close to parodying themselves, but it's like because they all hit so hard.
Yep.
They did kind of pull it off, but dude, they're just in there. It's like, you fucking moot cocksucker, you. I'll fuck it with the, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's like, Raven. It's just very Raven.
And I love Pacino, but like, I don't think he fit as Hoffa. And I'm only saying that because of how many other times I've seen Hoffa portrayed really good. Like the Hoffa biopic with Jack Nicholson is not a great movie, but Jack Nicholson really does a great fucking as Hoffa. And like we've all seen Hoffa, you know, like I know how this guy and I don't know. He just didn't what. But again, you get it's the movie nerd in me is like, I'm seeing all these guys in one place. This is fucking cool. Whatever. But yeah, you know, that's another one where it's like, I might throw that on if I want to go to sleep, you know, but it was good. But yeah, Django wipes the floor with a lot of those. Oh, this is a different year.
That was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood year, but dude, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
it's fucking great.
Phenomenal too. Yeah.
Yeah. No, dude, fucking love it. Like it every now and then it kind of sneaks up there on my Tarantino almost number one because it's also fucking hilarious.
It's great. I think it might be his pound for pound funniest movie.
For sure. A lot to me as a comedian.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah. Rewatchability, dude. I think you have to have comedy for something to be supremely rewatchable. Like that's what something has to be. Like there can be a great movie, but if it doesn't have brevity and comedy, you're probably not going to throw it on again. But if it has that, that's why The Sopranos is like the most rewatchable. It's more rewatchable than Breaking Bad. I love Breaking Bad, but like if you're going to rewatch one of them, you rewatch The Sopranos because you rewatch it the same way you would rewatch Seinfeld. You just throw on one episode and hear fucking Paulie call someone a fucking Goomba Manook, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, The Sopranos is absolutely, definitely funnier, but Breaking Bad's got humor in it too.
It does, but dude, there's episodes of The Sopranos that I swear to you, I'm like, they're making a comedy on purpose. Right. It's not like this is a dark show that has comedy. It's like they got sitcom writers to write this show, and every now and then they fucking off somebody,
murder somebody. Yeah,
yes, that's dude, true. It's so that goddamn funny.
Yeah. All right. Well. That's about what I've got for the Oscars, I think.
Well, there you go. I mean, one day soon, I do want to discuss the history of the Oscars because there's some really fascinating stuff. But I'm glad we did this. And see, we didn't have to watch it. You know what I mean?
No. Is that what you were going to do? Were you prepared to talk about the history and I just steamrolled you the whole time?
No. I wasn't prepared to talk about
it. Okay. Prepared.
All right. Dude, I mean, listen, if you had have said, Corey, tell me about the history of the Oscars. Yeah, I could have done it. You know what I mean? But no, that's not what I wanted to do. Right. Do you want to do some airmail, my friend?
Hey.
Okay. Let's do it. Oh, Lord, we got a shit ton that I have starred here. Subject line, Cho and Trey are both dumbasses.
Here we go.
Hey, guys, I love the show, and I've emailed before. Freemasons and Christmas lights. I'm currently listening to the Hedy Lamarr episode, and I've got to give you dipshits a history lesson. Austrians and Germans both speak German, so of course their names sound similar. Also, Hitler himself was Austrian and joined the German army in World War One. I don't remember. Did we say? Neither. Yeah, did we say something that alluded?
I think we were talking about what her name originally was, I think, which was like, wasn't it like Hedwig Schleisenfeisen or something like that? I don't remember the context of what I always said either, but it was something about that, I think.
It's so often I read one of these where we're getting called wrong, and I'm like, I believe you, but I don't even remember being wrong about that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see here. All right, subject line, the Kamchatka. So I just listened to the episode about Timothy Dexter, and it reminded me when was that?
A long time ago.
And it reminded
I think that was one of the first remote episodes, I think. So I mean a while ago.
It reminded me of another one of history's great tales of fuck up, the Russian repair ship, the Kamchatka. The basic story is that Russia and Japan went to war. Russia had its entire quote, Navy in the Baltic Sea, and given that Japan is in the Pacific, the Tsar decided to order his fleet to sail from the Baltic around Africa and Asia to the Pacific. One of the ships in his fleet was the Kamchatka, the most inept and disastrous war vessel to ever sail. The Kamchatka opened fire on British fishing vessel between Denmark and the UK. It thought they were Japanese warships. This almost started a war between the UK and Russia. On two different occasions, they reported to the fleet that they had been attacked and were sinking. There was no enemy within hundreds of miles, and the ship was fine. You know what? There's a shitload of stuff here, and this is great. Thank you for sending this in. I'm going to save all this, and we're just going to fucking do an episode on the Kamchatka. How about that? Thank you, Dr. Drew. Really appreciate that. One last one here. I got to read this one because it's from our friend, Dr. Kim, and the subject line is Puritanical Buckle Blood with a Side of Meatballs.
Here we go. Kim Cusato.
Kim Cusato. Yeah. Yep. Always talking shit about how we don't hit and how we're not healthy and we're going to die soon. That's Kim, who we love, by the way. Yep. Dear Trey and Corey, love the Hedy Lamarr tribute. Oh, and by the way, I know a lot of people, when we read airmail, they're like, hey, you've only read me once, but you've read Kim a lot. I don't know what to tell you, but she subscribes to Trey's Patreon and my Substack. So, like, that's just how that goes. You know what I mean? We live in a capitalistic country, and money does buy you some things. Like, I'm going to give Kim a little bit. I'm going to give her a little bit of preferential treatment. Which, by the way, patreon.com/TreyCrowder and bonuscorey.com. Love the Hedy Lamarr tribute. Love to hear about powerful women. We did have someone, I got to mention this. We had someone write in that was like, dear Corey and Trey, thank you so much for talking about Hedy Lamarr on International Women's Day. And I totally was about to respond like, I'm so glad you noticed that. Guys, that was a huge coincidence.
Utter coinky dink.
Utter coinky dink. Now, I will say this to give us credit. Like, we talk about women, powerful women, a lot on this show. Like, I don't think we can be accused of only talking about like men.
It would be funny if if we admitted that, we're like, yeah, total coincidence. We had no idea. You know, we don't keep up with when every single day is, when it comes out or whatever. And then, like, on next week's episode, if we were like, y'all,
it's Gerard, International Donut Day or whatever.
We started doing that every week, you know, with more and more obscure things, whatever it happened to be, but after professing our ignorance on Women's Day. Anyway, go ahead.
But the truth is, like, we knew it was International Women's Day when it happened, but we record these in advance and don't look 2 days into our fucking calendar. But I come from quite nutty relations. My Nana Maria Trohani Angelina Rathburn, parentheses, horny lady with young impotent boyfriends about whom I have written before, married Orson Rathburn around 1944 after she was abused and beaten by Ofemo Angelina, but not before she had an affair with Giuseppe Martorona, which produced my mother, Kim.
This is some serious spaghetti shit going on here, Kim. Goddamn.
Anyway, when she married Orson, he was a widower with five kids, and one of them, my Aunt Anna Louise, Aunt Lou to me, who married Nana's oldest son, Orlando Augustina Angelina, a.k.a. Uncle Lenny, which is how Nana and Orson met at their oldest kid's wedding. Decided to investigate the genealogy of the Rathburns and found relations all the way back to the Mayflower. I was wondering when this was going to get to that buckle shit. I was horrified by this, finding pilgrim blood about the ickiest one one can spawn from. But then I remembered that, despite the fact that Orson adopted Mom, she was the product of an affair with a Giuseppe. With Giuseppe Martorona, and is 100% Italian by blood, so I escaped the puritanical buckle-tainted serum. Or so I thought. Unfortunately, Aunt Lou wouldn't let it go. She started digging into a whole lot of relations of folks who married into the Angelina Rathburn clan and discovered that my father's mother, Rachel Loud, my only non-spaghetti grandparent, had relatives on the Mayflower as well. My horror resurfaced, and I knew that I would not be able to escape it. I must own it. I am a Spilgrametti. I am a Spilgrametti American. Just take me out back and stone me. Yours in shame, Kim C. Kim, God damn it. I love you so much. You can send us your airmail at puttingonairs@gmail.com. I already mentioned Trey's Patreon and my Substack. Thank you all for subscribing to this show. And if you're not watching us, you can do that at watchpoa.com. Trey, tell everybody where you're going to be in the next couple weeks or whatever.
Go to treycrowder.com, look at all my upcoming dates. I've got a bunch later this year. In the next few weeks, I've only got a couple in Seattle and Vancouver. But then after that, I'm going all over the place. So yeah, treycrowder.com.
All right. Like I said, thanks for, you know, leave us a review on the iTunes or the whatever podcast service. Oh, we have to say this. I totally forgot. If you are one of the 4 to 5% of airheads who listen to us on Google Podcasts is going away. I don't know why. I don't know how Google failed at something, but they did. So please go to another podcast platform, subscribe to Putting On Air so that you won't miss episodes. And while you're there, leave us a 5-star review. If you're not going to leave us a 5-star review, just listen and you don't have to say anything. You know what I mean? It really helps the show. Watch us at watchpoa.com. And as always, stay fancy. Motherfuckers. Skew.
Mm-hmm.
Skew.
Here's Lydia Lovelace.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cunt, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.